Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of the DINFOS Way, a Department of Defense podcast developed and produced at the Defense Information School. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at DINFOS. On the show today is Colonel Dave Butler. He's a longtime communicator and public affairs officer and is currently the strategic advisor for communications and outreach for the Chief of Staff of the Army. He's been the PAO for the Joint Chiefs of Staff and the Joint Special Operations Command and has done everything from being boots on the ground in Iraq to forming information strategy for the entire military. In this episode, we'll talk about the Secretary of Defense's directives to create a leaner, more agile fighting force, Army command consolidation, and advice for communicators navigating this transformation. Colonel Butler, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I realized that I kind of put this one together last minute. I appreciate you, man.
Easy day. We're happy to have you back. Obviously, we did an episode, I think in 2023, where you came on and talked to us about advice for young professionals and sort of where the military was going as far as communications go. And obviously, we've had some new directives and some new pieces of advice from the Secretary of Defense on down. So we kind of wanted to have you on to just talk about that stuff, explain to service members and communicators sort of what's happening and just steer us in the direction of being able to navigate this transformation as best as possible.
Yeah, super cool. Thanks. I think the Army is going through the most fundamental change of our lifetime right now.
100%. Yeah. Can you kind of speak to what the transformation is for any of the uninitiated?
Yeah. So kind of start with the problem, right? And then go towards the solution. So we know technology is changing super, super fast. We see it in Ukraine. We see it in Israel. The tools of war are changing, you know, what we're hearing from the Ukraine, sometimes in a three-week technology cycle. Mm-hmm. You know, the drones are getting updated that fast, the electronic warfare. Anybody who's been around for a little while knows about the Department of Defense acquisitions process. It doesn't change that fast. It certainly doesn't change in a three-week cycle. Because we have oversight, which we appreciate, we have there's a lot of laws and regulations with how the government, or specifically the DOD, spends its money. It moves very, very slow, and you can conceive of something now that you probably won't see for 7 years, and we realize that that's a failing way to do business. We can't get technology and tools in the hands of our soldiers 7 years at a time. You know, we have to be much, much faster than that. And so the solution, the Secretary of Defense signed a directive saying, hey, Army, get after it. You know, I want you to cut obsolete programs, which is a big deal, and I want you to invest in technology-focused AI, network-focused. I want you to get the best tools our technology, the American technology industry, can offer in the hands of our soldiers. And it's a game changer. It's absolutely a fundamental game changer. The friction around that is, I mentioned, cuts. And so there's a lot of what we call programs of record. And there's a lot of ways we spend our money that don't serve the American soldier. And it's for whatever interest. You know, there's a lot of interests involved in this, but we're forced to buy things that simply aren't going to be successful on the battlefield. And so the Secretary of Defense gave us the top cover of the directive to cut a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about billions of dollars in taxpayer savings to invest in real technology.
And is that the same thing with the transformation? Idea behind the transformation of the higher ranks of the officer corps as well, and what's happening with that transformation and how that's changing?
Yeah, so it's related. And General George has been doing this for, you know, he's been the chief for about a year and a half. What we're trying to do is maintain the strength of the Army, 400,000 plus soldiers in the Army, but put that number, put those people in the formations, in the divisions, and in the brigades. What we have right now is, you know, through 20 years of buildup over the GWAT, we have a very bloated structure. We have a lot of bosses and a lot of staffs around the bosses, and that's at the detriment of our soldiering ranks. And so we're cutting all this overhead and all this structure. It's it's also a fundamental change, and it's going to be interesting because the way we grew up in the Army, you know, it's this is just kind of been status quo. You continue to build, but we want to put more soldiers. We say more soldiers with helmets. We want to put more soldiers into ranks rather than in staffs.
Yeah, and actually providing, you know, that boots on the ground sort of mentality that I guess big military figures that sort of our senior leaders have been missing over the last few years or over the recent period of time. So just trying to bring them back to the troops, trying to make it a more on the ground effort, I think.
Yeah, that's right. We want to fill the ranks back up, right? So there's squads out there that are, you know, unmanned. We're really hurting on mid-level non-commissioned officers, and we want to get those guys back into formations and out of offices in the Pentagon and offices at 3- and 4-star headquarters. But you mentioned there's a different way it serves a warfighter rather than just kind of numbers of people, and I think we all know this. But when you have several layers of command and several layers of oversight, you know, leadership, you have more and more bureaucracy. So it's harder for that platoon sergeant to get something done. You know, it's harder because he's got, instead of, you know, one singular chain of command, he's got, there's eight different oversight headquarters units that are trying to bear down. And so one of the things that General George has been doing is trying to make everything simpler, trying to make the Army simpler, because everything, all these decisions that he makes and Sergeant Major of the Army make are all about serving the folks, the warfighters, the mm-hmm. folks down in the ranks.
One of the things they've done most recently was there's been a consolidation of the Army Futures Command and the Training and Doctrine Command into the new Army Transformation and Training Command. Can you sort of speak to what that's about and how that transformation came to be?
Yeah, so that'll the 4-star will remain in Austin, Texas. Army Futures Command was a command set up only a few years ago, really, to be focused on, you know, the next generation of equipment and the next generation of warfare and how we're going to fight in the future. What we saw, and I'll try to be careful with this, is that we kept talking about Army of 2030 and Army 2035, but as we discussed, technology's been changing so quick, mm-hmm. we forgot about the Army of today. And so we've got our soldiers who are, you know, technologically savvy and ready to take on any kind of piece of technology, kind of, you know, easily and without a whole bunch of instruction. And we're giving them like archaic, you know, government made BS. And so again, General George is like, we've got to get focused on, we got to get this tech, today's tech, in the hands of our soldiers. So stop worried about the Army 2035 and start worried about the Army 2025 and 2026. And so that's where Futures Command is changing a little bit. But what we're doing with TRADOC, and that's been a long time institution, this is a really big change. We're merging TRADOC into Army Futures Command. And what we hope to do there is take the culture of thinking about the future, the culture of agility, and the culture of being agile and tech-focused, and build that into our training and build that into our doctrine. TRADOC is, you know, they've been trying to do that. They've been doing a great job of that. But we think by merging these commands that it's going to make TRADOC's bill a little bit easier to go. So we're bringing these centers of excellence all together so that we're working on a common purpose along with our acquisitions corps. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Very complicated in the way the Army buys and gets stuff, but we're trying to simplify it.
And I was just going to say that it sounds like the whole idea behind this is to streamline the entire process of anything, really, from training all the way up to operations and everything in between. So to make a leaner, more agile fighting force is the goal of this.
That's the goal. You said it very, very well. Try to get technology faster, streamline decision making, streamline our doctrine, our training, so that it's more current and it can change faster.
Mm-hmm. You know, as we talk about technology and we talk about how rapidly it's advancing, you mentioned AI and you mentioned some other things that we're going to start paying a lot more attention to and bringing into today's military. How do we balance the need to improve with technology and continue to grow and adapt with it, but also our needs for operational security and considering potential adversary responses?
Yeah, I mean, here's the recipe for failure. Keep doing what we're doing, right? So because we're using archaic technology that is not, it's bespoke, meaning like it's built only for the military to use. There's not a commercial industry that's continuing to innovate and continue to learn how to secure themselves. There's no value proposition for a company that's selling one single thing, like a single network or a single piece of or single software capability to the Army to innovate, because they, in the old way, they've sold it to us for 7 years, right? And we're in this program of record. We're locked into this thing. And so the way around it is we're investing into more modern companies. We're finding great partners out in the software and defense tech industry that are willing to innovate with us. They don't want to be locked into 7 years for their job security or whatever. They want to build the best product. And we're re-looking how we get into all these contracts and this acquisitions process to find good partners that are willing to innovate. It's this mindset of folks that want to continue to improve, continue to innovate, and they're doing it for America, they're doing it for soldiers. We found them. We're working with plenty of corporations now that are willing to do it. They don't need us to sign a contract for 7 years, and then they go stagnant.
Yeah, so that allows for more modernization, more rapid modernization,
super
keeping track of the time.
That's it.
Yeah. That's excellent. So, you know, obviously, when something like this happens that is such a major and significant change to the Army, you've got to get buy-in from your troops and from the people that are involved in this. So sort of what's the communication strategy for telling the average soldier about these changes and how it's going to positively impact them?
Yeah. So it's a challenge that I kind of have taken on that I don't think we've done a great job on, and I'd like to do a little bit better job. And as I was driving here, so maybe get on the Dinfos podcast. Because of some of the challenges that I mentioned earlier, try to inform them as much as possible what we're doing as quickly as possible. And so far, that's been pretty good. As I sit here today, do I know what the average American soldier, say Private First Class Randall, what does Private First Class Randall have any idea of what we're doing? I don't know. Do we want her to? We certainly do, right? We're doing, related to this, you know, we're doing transformation and contact. I don't know if we talked about it before. We leaned into, you know, a bunch of Army-focused media to talk about what transformation and contact is. Basically, we're one brigade at a time, for really ends up being a fairly short amount of time. We're just infusing a bunch of technology with them. This latest brigade in the transformation and contact has 400 drones.
Wow.
Right? And we're going to visit them next week. They're going through JRTC right now, and they're testing all this equipment out. And I say 400 drones, but they have all the latest stuff. And then they're going to come back to us from, you know, E1 to 06, they're going to come back to us and say, we want to do that too, all across the Army. I don't think we want to. And so we do get a little bit of feedback in terms of like, they want to be a part of it, which makes us feel great. But we want soldiers to know what their Army is doing, because we want them to understand, to have hope that the technology that they're working on today is not going to be what they're going to have, you know, in the future.
Yeah.
They're eventually going to have the latest technology. And as soon as they have it and are using it, There's going to be new latest technology, and we're going to move that fast and get them that best.
That's great. You know, one of the things that I've noticed recently is that these modernization changes are happening in a very obvious and visual way, which is great for our career field in public affairs. You know, the Secretary of Defense and the ATS-DPA are doing weekly updates. They're doing video pieces on social media. They're talking about the newest innovations, the newest challenges, the things we have to think about as service members and people connected to the military, Department of Defense members. So it's already happening and changing. What kind of new changes, what kind of other modernization things can soldiers and service members look forward to in the coming days, weeks, and months?
They're going to see it in training. They're going to see, hopefully they're going to see their ranks being filled back up with the proper leadership. We haven't, in terms of like the soldier experience, we haven't announced it yet, and we haven't rolled it out because we're concentrating on this technology thing, but we're going to dig into barracks, and we're putting a whole bunch of money in barracks right now, and food service. The food service thing is going to be pretty exciting.
I can hear people being excited right now.
I know. And it's always been kind of this thorn that, you know, we just can't get it right. We can't get it right. And I go on forever, but everybody recognizes the problem. One of the things that we're doing, and I'm probably talking about this a little ahead of time, we're partnering with Chef Irvine, and basically he's rebuilding DFACs to be more like restaurants, you know, like modern, like modern day, like maybe you would see on a college campus or whatever. And so we're doing that kind of one part at a time, but we're doing it through so many exceptions to policy and so many, like, we just had to, it's all this paperwork. We just had to go through because plenty of people have tried to do this and ran into all these walls that we have put up. But General George, you know, grabbed the G4 and the Army Materiel Commander and said, figure it out. I don't care how many exceptions we need. I don't care how many Congress people we need to talk to about changing this law, whatever. Figure it out. We're going to feed our soldiers the right way. So those changes are coming. Barracks and soldier feeding and resourcing are coming. Right now, we're focused on updating the technology that we get in the hands of soldiers.
One of the things that I've heard being bandied about from our senior leaders is the idea that the Army is embracing the multi-domain operations format. Can you kind of speak to what that means? I mean, it sounds like a buzzword without any explanation. So can you kind of explain what that means for the Army?
Yeah, I mean, so we can't just be, and I'm going to be totally doctrinally jacked up in the way I explain it, but we just can't be we can't do one thing, right? Your Army has got to be able to deploy and fight and win anywhere, but it's not just force on force. You know, we've got to be able to integrate all kinds of different capabilities into the fight. And like we have these MDTFs, multi-domain task forces, assigned throughout the world now, and they're doing some amazing things. These guys in the Pacific are doing some amazing things. They have long-range munitions, so they can reach out very, very far with land-based, you know, missiles and rockets. They have the capability to vector in a joint force, and then they have like anti-satellite technology and kind of high-end drone technology and loitering munitions. And we've given these multi-domain task forces the ability to innovate quickly and. And so just as an example, we want our organizations to be able to operate across, you know, every domain rather than being one kind of like maneuver battalion. Does
sure.
that make sense?
Yeah. With all this happening so recently and so quickly, which is amazing, have you had any feedback from folks who are on the ground already about the changes that they've seen and how they feel about it?
Yeah. So again, the contingent of folks that are going through it, they love it. Like the reenlistment rates in the Transformation and Contact Brigade are the highest in anywhere in the armies because they're doing probably what they joined the Army to do. We're trying to cut away all the BS, get great tools in the hands, and they get to go training and they're getting to go see that and then give feedback to the highest levels of the Army so that we can make it better for the next group. So the feedback has been great, but across the Army, you know, there's a lot of like, I want to do that too. And, you know, our problem is scale. It's a huge, huge Army. And so we've got to, this is part of this Army Transformation Initiative. We got to be able to scale this across the Army, not just do one brigade at a time or what we have right now are four brigades and two divisions going through this, the whole Army, including National Guard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to get all these guys to be able to transform and continue to transform like that.
You know, this is such an incredible opportunity for communicators and public affairs personnel as I think about this and extrapolate, because, you know, we are becoming more streamlined. We're becoming a more lethal fighting force. And as you said, soldiers are content and the morale is high because they're doing the job that they joined up to do. So obviously we can use these lessons and we can take these comments and feedback and hopefully create messages that will increase recruiting, you know, retention and all of that stuff, that all of that comes from this transformation and change. So it affects every part of the Army everywhere when we think about it. And it's interesting from a PA perspective, because as long as we can get this messaging out there to make sure that the troops are aware that it's happening, I think it's going to increase all of those things. So it's interesting to look at from both an operational perspective and from a PA perspective, right?
Yeah, I think the more we show for internal communications and our public, the more we show our soldiers doing our jobs, the more receptive our audiences are to that. And I mean, you know, we've seen it, but it seems simple. It's just like we don't always do it. So yeah, we envision, As we think about empowering our junior leaders and cutting away the bureaucracy and cutting away all these headquarters and stuff, we would want to see the same thing in the public affairs community. I've always found the PAOs to be the public affairs kind of line of communication to be super flat. Like I used to laugh about being ahead of the J3. You know, I would hear from a subordinate unit, or I'd be reporting up to a higher headquarters what's happening in our organization on mission or whatever to my higher headquarters PAO, or hearing from a subordinate PAO. And we're, because we have the relationships and, you know, we're super flat and fast. And we want the whole Army to be like that, by the way. And I just say that we can't create artificial walls for ourselves in the public affairs community. And if you're a leader listening to this, think about how you're empowering people and the restrictions you put on, and think about if those restrictions make sense, or you're just putting them on because you're risk averse or because it's your comfort level. We have very talented folks out there, and I'd say let them go. Mm. And then when they screw up, take on that risk and say, yeah, they screwed up a little bit. Okay, we'll sort that out. Just let them friggin' operate. But it's a little bit of risk. We're going to screw it up sometimes. That's sure. Okay. But we're going to succeed more than we're going to screw it up.
And, you know, that leads into my next question very well, because we talked a lot about service members and your average soldier and sort of what they think and do. What other messages do you want to transmit to senior leaders in the officer corps about this transformation and how they can effectively communicate it and how they can make sure they're doing best practices as it pertains to getting things done with it?
Yeah, I mean, I just kind of echo General George and what the guys I work around continue to say is, just because you're not a transformation and contact brigade, or you're not directly affected by this ATI, which everybody in the Army is going to be affected by it eventually, but maybe not right now, doesn't stop you from innovating, right? One of the things that kind of got us on this track was a brigade commander out in 2CR in Germany that totally just saw the future of the battlefield and totally innovated on his own. And I realize it's still a brigade commander level, but it made us realize, a big army, like, wow, you know, these guys are just getting after it on their own, despite what the army's given them, you know, despite what bureaucracy we put over the top. They just got after it and did a bunch of innovation in terms of how they were fighting this striker brigade, and they got Star Shield involved, and they were first ones to adopt like this new network infrastructure, and they were just doing all this stuff on their own. And we're like, we can help brigades do this across the army, and we kind of modeled our transformation contact on this one 2CR. Is amazing. The army has a long, long history of soldiers innovating, right? There's the old World War II story about the staff sergeant that put the device on the front of the tank, you know, to break through the hedgerows, mm-hmm. and which became adopted across, you know, all the Allied formations. And the reason that our enemies can't keep up with us usually is because we have young NCOs and soldiers figuring it out, and we want to pour gasoline on that, and we want that to live across the army and empower them to do as much as they can on their own. Don't wait for like the chief of staff of the army to come and bless your brigade with a transformation and contact. Like, there's all this innovation that can be taking place at the lowest level, and I would just say that the junior leaders over the top of those folks, let them go, let them innovate, let them figure stuff out, you know, encourage new ideas and crosstalk and thinking, because that's what makes us the best army. It's a non-commissioned officer.
And it's the only way to grow and change. You know, this constant innovation that you're talking about and sort of allowing it to be free and open across the army, I can't imagine that's going to lead to anything but new ways of doing business that are better than the ways that we used to. Because as you said, soldiers will find a way to innovate and find a way to make the best things happen with what they have. And I think that's just going to continue to happen.
It is. And what we have to do, and it doesn't have to come from big army, but one of the things we have to figure out, I think public affairs officers can be part of this, public affairs people, I should say. We have to, like, when there's innovations at the lowest level and something super cool is happening, we have to figure out how to tell that story, right? And get that. Mainly, I'm not necessarily concerned with the folks in Idaho knowing about this, but it would be really good, like, if this innovation was happening in the 1st Infantry Division and a squad in the 1st Infantry Division, how cool would it be if the squad in the 101st Airborne Division says, hey, did you see what that guy did over there in 1st ID? I want to do that too. Or I have my own idea to do something like that. But how do we bridge that gap, right? From Fort Riley to Fort Campbell. I think public affairs people have a role in spreading the word about innovation.
For sure. And you know, they're innovating as well. And so it needs to continue to happen on both sides of the camera. And I think public affairs personnel, as we continue to tell the military story and the soldier story and the airman story and every other story that's out there, getting that message to as many people as possible in the right places that they can grow and innovate from those same things is going to be incredibly important. You know, that is going to be a something we can need to continue to focus on in the public affairs and communications career field. But even more, I think we need to even greater expand our efforts into getting that message out there so that as many people as possible know about this transformation. But then on the other side of that, too, our enemies are aware of it as well.
That's right. Yeah. Can I make a note on the public affairs innovation? You're exactly right. So there's folks out there in our community that are innovating, that are willing to talk to different audiences in different ways. It's usually, because our first name is public in public affairs, it's usually very public. You know what I've seen, though, across the public affairs community? I've seen a lot of criticism and it's easy to criticize somebody who's in the public, and a lot of questioning. And I just say, take a step back. One, ask yourself, you know, would you ever be gutsy enough to do what this person's doing? And then two, give them some credit for getting after it and, you know, trying something new. We do plenty of we do plenty of easy factory engagements and, you know, army.mil story or whatever that's specifically curated, but may not be nearly as effective as getting out there in a local podcast, you know, in your community or whatever. And some of it's going to be a little bit edgy. Some of the people in our army who are public affairs adjacent maybe are on social media and they're doing, you know, they're doing great for the army, but some of it's edgy and it can invite some criticism. And I'd say, why don't you turn that into criticism a little bit and turn up the, recognize that these folks are like just trying to push the envelope a little bit, because they know maybe what we're doing traditionally is not the end all be all to things. So I love when public affairs people innovate, and it's the same conversation. You got to give them some risk tolerance there and just let them go. We'll screw some stuff up. Not everything's perfect. It's okay. We just need to get after it.
I love that approach to this because, yeah, as you know, that's not something that has always been the case, right? You know, we've got to mind our P's and Q's, and people are worried about the effects of their actions, but there's no way to innovate if we're afraid to change, right? And I would also say, as I'm sure you know, that one of the biggest complaints about the service from service members is how things don't ever change and things remain the same. So this new approach of innovating and changing, I think, is going to strike a good chord with the vast majority of people. At least I would hope.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope so too. Here's a very simple thing, right? We get media queries. Media queries come into your organization or whatever, and the traditional way to answer a media query is to write a statement via email. And, you know, maybe your boss sees a statement. Maybe your boss's boss sees a statement. I mean, in some cases, like the JAG, we'll have to look at the statement or whatever. And these are routine issues, and these are routine queries. Meanwhile, the media is like, oh, here we go again with this unit that, you know, is manicuring some kind of statement. I'd say pick up the phone and call the reporter, right, and have a conversation with the reporter. The fact is that you addressed an issue. You probably, on or off the record, built a whole bunch of context about the issue. Yep. You helped the reporter understand it better. You helped the reporter do their job of communicating to the public a little bit better. And you built a relationship with this reporter rather than some kind of email exchange. And that's a form of, I can't believe I'm saying this, picking up the phone and talking to a reporter is a form of innovation in itself, rather than slinging a curated email statement. And so does that require a little bit of risk tolerance? For sure. Could you be criticized that you said the instead of the? Sure, I guess. But just innovate, pick up the phone, get after it, you know, answer queries. Or better yet, when you have a story, pick up the phone and pitch it, you know?
It sounds so crazy, but at the same time, I mean, as long as we're not afraid to do these things, that's what we should be doing, right?
Should be doing it.
Taking away the fear, the concern of making mistakes, I think, is a very significant part of what you're talking about, because people need the opportunity to grow and change and develop, and they can't do that if they're afraid of the repercussions if they make a mistake, and we're all human, right? So I think that's a really important part of what you're talking about, and taking that fear away from service members is going to lead to nothing but more of that innovation, I think.
It's just a different mindset. And I'll tell you what, I'm operating from the top of the Army right now. General George underwrites risk like nobody I know. He allows people to innovate. He expects leaders to make a decision. And when they screw up, he doesn't judge them for it. You know, obviously, when moral, ethical, legal, like we hold people sure. accountable. But when somebody's made a judgment call and it probably wasn't the best thing or whatever, he supports that person because he knows their character and he knows they were trying to do the right thing. I just screwed up a a thing with the Sean Ryan podcast some months ago. I thought I was having an off the record conversation, and it was very, very kind of a casual conversation I was having. And I specifically said, you know, this doesn't belong on the podcast, and I'm speculating, blah, blah. And anyway, the guy kind of, I got some public scrutiny for it. I got plenty of public scrutiny for it. And my leadership in the Army, they were like, huh, you got in some trouble, huh? I was like, yeah, I kind of screwed this up a little bit. And they were like, okay. That was the conversation I had.
That's quite the paradigm shift.
I guess it's a paradigm shift. You know, General George has been in the Army for a long time, so I know he's been doing this. I think I've been doing this. I'd like to say it's not a paradigm shift. I'd just like to say that we just need leaders in the right positions to allow our folks to excel.
This has been a fascinating conversation, sir. I think we've covered a large part of what we intended to come here to talk about as far as the Army transformatives and what we're looking at in the future. And it sounds like it's not just the future, it's today that we're talking about.
That's right, yep.
And that's a pretty significant change in messaging and thinking about what we do operationally. So that's been great, sir. Is there anything that you want to add, something that we haven't talked about, something that you want other service members to know about these transformations and changes, or really anything else that you want to say? Is there anything you want to add?
I just say that innovate at your level. Transformation and contact is coming to you, you know, if you're in the Army. And the Army Transformation Initiative is coming to the whole Army. It's a fundamental change.
Yeah.
The in our lifetime, the Army's never has changed like it's about to be in the next year.
That's great.
Exciting
times.
Yeah.
Well, sir, thank you so much for coming on the show. We are happy to have you whenever you want to come on. So hopefully we'll get to talk to you again. And for anyone listening, if you'd like any other information about this or any other places to go, where can we send them to get more information about Army Transformatives and all the other stuff we talked about?
General George has been all over the news. So if you could just Google Army Transformation Initiative, plenty will come up, or just see what the Army's doing. So
perfect.
Yeah, man.
Sir, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Take care.